Hello, welcome to Waldman's Words with Eddie Coral, or Corral. This is a common theme on the show where, either intentionally or unintentionally, I don't have the last name pronounced correctly. It could be a Coral, it could be a Corral, but in my opinion, he's Eddie C. I had the pleasure of meeting Eddie a few times in Los Angeles a few months back with his wonderful publicist, Jamie Roberts. Shout out to Jamie Roberts. She is frickin' rad. And Eddie was a cool guy, and we had a really nice lunch at this place called the Soho House, where I don't usually go, but this time I was lucky because we were only a few feet away from Nicole Kidman and Keith Urban, and I can tell you that they are statues in person, like abnormally gorgeous. And I usually don't name drop like this, but I just felt that they deserved that, so shout outs to Nicole Kidman. The movie To Die For is extremely underrated. And Keith Urban, you could shred that guitar, bruh. So back to Eddie C. Not saying his last name's pronunciation, but Eddie has a company called Pure Tracks. And earlier this year, I had a last minute guest cancellation, and Jamie told me that I should hit her up if that ever happened because I schedule a long time out, and she's like, oh, I just started working with this company called Pure Tracks, and there's a guy named Cedric who I think would be a great guest. And he was very passionate guy, very, very smart, and apparently a strong cage fighter. So do not mess with him. And I had the pleasure of getting to know some of the other people on the Pure Tracks company when artists that I'm currently, I guess, in the process of rebranding, the Boomtown Crooks, we have, you know, some material up on Pure Tracks. So I'm excited to learn more about the company. I'm excited for you guys to learn more. We've had some other people in the crypto space on the show. We've had Jesse Grushak over at Ujo Music, and of course, Cedric, you know, at Pure Tracks on, and now we're going to have Eddie. So let's learn a lot from this Southern gentleman. Next week on the show, I'm going to be interviewing Taylor Anspaugh, and I don't, as you regular listeners know, have, I guess, the talent on the show a lot. It's a lot of behind the scenes people, but Taylor happens to be in a band with one of my best friends from growing up, Dave Prince, who I was in the very first band that I gigged with, and he's played with Lido Beach a bunch of times. And his band has a unique angle because they do not earn their income from it. So they could be actually a really perfect candidate for Pure Tracks. So maybe for their next release or their older releases, I can get them involved. But they're a hardworking New York City band, and they all have other jobs, so it's going to be a different angle to talk about. And by the time this episode airs, it will already have been Thanksgiving, but I'm going to be in New York for Thanksgiving 2 weeks from today. So I'm really excited about that, see my family, and that's it. So I hope you're enjoying this episode so far. I'm going to learn a lot about Eddie. I miss Emily Burke, as always. She's going to get the sad shout-out, and you could tune in every single Tuesday night, 5 o'clock my time zone, which is Pacific, 8 o'clock Eastern time zone. The show is live. It reruns every Sunday morning, bright and early, 5 a.m. Pacific, 8 a.m. Eastern time. Eddie and I actually had an 8 a.m., or actually it was my, I think it was actually 7 a.m., holy cow, 7 a.m. Pacific time. We went and had some bagel nosh in Beverly Hills, and that place is fucking awesome, especially for an expatriate from New York. Even Jamie would be proud as a current New Yorker. You can go on adobe.com, stream every episode. You can go on the iTunes podcast app, download and subscribe for free. So we're going to take a short break, listen to whatever songs Adobe is playing. I listened to an episode last night. They played Less Than Jake. I cannot complain about that. And be good to each other. All right. So the way we start these shows typically is I butcher someone's last name, and then they correct me. So is it Coral, Corral, or am I wrong on both accounts?
Corral, just like where they keep the cow.
Okay. Well, that's what I thought. Okay, good. That makes so much sense for a Southern gentleman, as I gave you a shout out in the section. So I told the people listening, the tens of gazillions of listeners, that we had a really, really good meal at the Soho House and saw Nicole Kidman, Keith Urban. Then we had a little private meal, but I mean, how did we get acquainted? Was it Jamie?
Yeah, it was through Jamie.
Jamie's the best. She's amazing. So I guess you and I have a lot of mutuals, and I had Cedric on the show, and he was a great interview. But I want to talk about long before you got involved in the crypto world and PeerTrex. So where are you from? I don't even know where you're originally from.
Born and raised in Houston, Texas.
There you go. I've
got a long, my father, we're Houstonian as well. He was a fireman, 50 years in the fire department.
Wow.
He was an upright jazz bass player, and he used to sing with my mom, who had a jazz, they had a trio, and they used to, you know, back then used to tour the clubs, you know, little, what are those, jazz saloon type clubs, you know, and
yep,
they used to make the tour. And my dad actually played bass, sat in with Billy Gibbons' stepfather.
Oh, wow.
Billy Gibbons' father from ZZ Top.
Oh, yeah.
Played jazz piano, and my dad sat in with him way before, you know, this way back when, before they were any ZZ Top. But yeah, I thought that was interesting. So
did they play with pesos? Because that's what I saw, that ZZ Top used to use pesos as guitar picks, which I find extremely scintillating.
Yeah, and apparently Billy plays with some very, very light string, like the size of a hair.
Oh, wow. I would drop it. I mean, guitar picks and guitar strings disappear like the Dickens, but what my Houston story is actually with a band that is often played on the station on Adobe, this band Mayday Parade, my band The City Drive, was playing a few tour dates with them, and we played this venue called Java Jazz, which was in a strip mall in Houston, and we went across the street to Whataburger, and I'll say this on record, I like Whataburger more than In-N-Out. I know I'll get crucified here, but whatever, but there was a hit and run outside of the venue that we played. So that's my Houston story. So please tell me that your upbringing was slightly better than that.
Yeah, well, the reason I always mention my, you know, that's the reason I'm in the music business, to tell you the truth. And it, from then, you know, my dad entered the fire department, and through the ranks, you know, he ended up becoming the fire marshal for the city. So that was like, you know, I think everyone knows a fire marshal in any city is a big, you know, restaurants and any venue with a crowd. And he used to always watch this where all, I mean, from who performed? Frank Sinatra.
Oh, cool.
The Jackson 5, Michael Jackson, James Brown. There was this famous little club. It's still active today, believe it. Dwight Yoakam, I believe, is playing this weekend. But little famous club here in Houston, and he worked, you know, as a fire marshal, and I used to end up going to all those shows. So
did you go to the ones that you mentioned? Because those are some epic ones.
Oh yeah, when I was a kid, I saw James Brown. He came backstage. I got pictures with all, I mean, just incredible stuff. I have a treasure chest, and you know. Then I ended up, I obviously going to school from there, but during my high school years, I ended up working with a local concert promoter here in town called Pace Concerts. And back then, I did not know Pace Concerts was like one of the largest touring production. You know, they did all the big shows from Journey, Van Halen, Rush, all those shows back then. And that's where I started, I think when I was 16 years old, picking up towels. That's where I got my start as a runner.
Did you play any instruments like your father, like any bass in your family?
Well, yeah, I actually started real young. I'm a drummer, percussionist, but then through junior high, I played clarinet and marching drum and all of that. Yeah.
Rhythm section family.
What's that?
You guys were a rhythm section family between you and your father.
Yeah, I think there's some long lost family videos somewhere floating around, but yeah, that's how I got my start, and from there it just really took off, or grew, I should say. You know, ups and downs all along the way in anything you do, but
yep,
yeah, that's kind of how it all started. From there, I ended up working for Clear Channel, Radio One. I took an independent route for a while when rap music first started.
As a runner, though, I'm curious, because a lot of people who listen to this are young people who are trying to break into the industry. So you have to learn that no job is too small. What did you have to do? And do you have any crazy stories in that regard?
The funnest, if that's a word, the best.
It's a word, funnest. Sure, go for it.
You know, We were instructed, you know, and we were at the bottom of the totem pole, really. You know, you had catering, which came in and set up the food for the day, and then you had the runners, usually just one or two. And your job for the day, you know, obviously as a runner, go get anything they want, from coffee to... But, I mean, we'd get there at, you know, 6, 8 o'clock in the morning, watch the trucks load in. You get to, I mean, you talk to everybody from the stagehands to the lighting, you know, everything. And then I was always appointed to the actual dressing rooms and working with the production and the stars and everything, and would cater to. One of my big stories was, is they said, hey, would you, I was working a Prince show. I ended up going on
tour. Wait, slow down. You were working a Prince show? You just said that so casually and nonchalantly, like, yeah, I just won the lottery and boom, boom, boom. You worked a Prince show. That's amazing. Sorry. And
yeah, rant. It wasn't just a show. I ended up going on the road for about 3 months with them. I did the first week in Houston with 7 dates, all sold out, and then did all 7 dates. But I mean, the you know, the stories of him being like around the clock was amazing. Just finished the show Sunday night, goes back to the hotel to shower, and they said, hey, would you mind sticking around till, could you stay till 6 in the morning? We're going to maybe need a runner. And I said, well, okay. What's happened? So, well, and we can't tell you. Anyway, Prince comes back after the show and ends up recording the album America from 12 midnight to 6 a.m. I got to sit in the stands and watch the whole thing. And I think I went out and got bananas for him at a grocery store. That was it.
Wait, well, how old were you when you did that?
Golly. What was maybe 19 years old.
Wow. That's some real trial by fire stuff, and trial by banana, by potassium. Yeah.
But those stories of, you know, he was a sugar guy. I mean, I literally one night had chocolate chip cookies and honey. Mm-hmm. I was, you know, he had the famous purple rain candy machine. I used to fill that up, you know. Yeah, I got tons of those stories like that. I was always the guy that you know, took care of the stars when they came in. And if I got lucky, I'd end up going on the road with them. So.
Well, candy must have been his vice, because I heard that he was really not in... I mean, I think he was a Jehovah's Witness, so he wasn't into drugs or alcohol. But I guess candy is not absent from that. Charleston Chew Bars must be exempt.
Right. Yeah, he had to love sugar. And yeah, had to keep going. But yeah, I've got a ton of those stories, but... God, I went on the road with quite a few bands back then.
But was that like, so you're 19, did you end up going to college? Or like, yes, I mean, this is pretty cool shit to do when you're young, so, and when you're old. Fuck it.
Yeah, I went to the University of Texas, majored in fraternity. Yeah, I was in
Austin?
Yep. I didn't know I always thought you worked to one. You know, they didn't say you were worked towards four. That a grade point average.
You know, right. That's kind of,
I always strive for one. They said it was the reverse, but anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it's good to be number one at some things, just not with a GPA, right? You know, it's not good to be the most wanted, but it's good to have the most album sales. Anyway, I digress. So, UT.
Actually, during school, I would, you know, and actually during the Prince shows, I took off a lot. I'd go in, you know, come back and go to school and then take off for another week, get on the road, and I ended up doing, you know, a lot of Houston, Austin, Dallas, the Texas region when a show would come into town. So, and then sometimes take off to New Orleans or Louisiana area, and just really work those two states. But it was the time of my life back then, for sure. Yeah. Cyndi Lauper, the Go-Go's, Journey.
Both Cyndi Lauper and the Go-Go's just actually debuted shows on Broadway. So it's kind of amazing how you brought both of those guys up.
Right.
That's pretty awesome. So when you were doing that and you were, you know, getting your degree in fraternity / Amstel Light or Coors Light, if it's Texas, what you kind of knew that as soon as you graduated with your 1.2 or your 4.0, whatever it is, that you wanted to work in the...
I was on my way. That's right.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. You had all the recommendations from Anheuser and Busch. So it's great.
The record labels couldn't turn me down then.
That's how could they? Those are two of their biggest benefactors, especially back then. So, So when did you actually become a full-time, and did you get your degree in fraternity? Because I didn't know that was offered, but it might be like a Texas thing.
Yeah, it came from the fraternity direct.
Oh, cool.
They still say it's in the mail.
Right? Oh, yeah. It's on some, like, toilet paper.
Like that's on the way.
Well, you can keep following up. But so what did you do though after you?
Well, you know, and then after all that transition, there was a lot, you know, because I was on the road a lot. I ended up producing some independent records back then, and that kind of took me, you know, further into the independent route. But then there was a point where the touring concert business was really slowing down, and so I ended up, you know, I was watching all my friends graduate and, you know, coat and tie jobs. And I ended up getting a Series 7 license and took off, became a stockbroker and all of that.
Wait. Because this is all over the place. But I want to know, like, producing, though. I mean, yeah, I do want to talk about stockbroker because that's another interesting thing, especially as a former New Yorker. But producing, how'd you get involved in that? That's a course another color.
You know, it was actually I met a DJ who was at a local radio station here in town, and a lot of the major labels used to watch these stations down in Houston. That's how they track certain areas around the country, some of the key radio. And back then, you know, there was no streaming and Spotify. It was straight up radio, you know, so all of the technology hadn't hit yet. So you got to remember where everyone's listening still on cassette and 12-inch mm-hmm. vinyl radio.
I'm not that young. I'm 37. My first albums were all on cassette, so I get it. The kids listening right now don't even know what a CD looks like. So, you know, everyone's different.
You know, the transition. Yeah, exactly. So I met a DJ that was at a local radio station, and, you know, just kept talking and talking. Next thing I know, he said, I want to put a record out and I'll get it on the radio station. And sure enough, we had radio station support. And like the very first song that I put out was, I think we sold 75,000 copies.
Holy shit. Bands like number one albums on the charts don't even do that now because no one buys music. So,
yeah, back then it was on its way, but we had a Phil, it's somewhat of a famous story, not famous, but we did have a Phil Collins sample in it. The song was called In the Air Tonight. And, it was at
wait,
a time
you
when
did that song?
What's that?
You did the In the Air Tonight? What?
No, we had a
sample of it.
Song.
Okay, there you go. Yeah. Okay, you scared the shit out of me. Okay, continue.
Sorry. Right, yeah. and that was right when sampling, you know, everyone was frowning on the creation of what rap music was back then. And we were right in the middle of that Biz Markie and all of the Warner Brothers and the Eazy-E and all that stuff back. It's just the timing. We fought all that. You know, today it's just mainstream putting out a record with samples on it. But back then, and yeah, I stepped into that. But after we got crushed on that is when I kind of said, you know what, I think I may look into being a broker. And that's about the time I got my license and went on that path for about 6 or 7 years.
Was that in Texas?
Part of it in Texas, and then I ended up moving to Chicago and worked at the Chicago Board of Trade. I was on the floor.
Oh, wow.
Grain pits. Yep, we traded corn, wheat, soybeans.
No bananas to Prince or anything?
Oil, blah, 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 blah. Yep.
Wait, do that voice again. That was pretty awesome.
I don't know if I can.
Oh, you can. If you put your mind to it, you can accomplish anything. So, Chicago, I mean, there's quite a vibrant music scene there. Actually, my favorite show I've ever played in my entire life, when I was in a band called The City Drive, we opened for Hoobastank at the House of Blues Chicago, and that crowd was wonderful. Those Midwestern crowds, and to Texas's credit, Texan crowds are always great too, because it's not like a New York City or an LA or Nashville where everyone knows someone in the industry. It was an actual event, so that was a pretty cool time.
Yeah, you know, and that's kind of, you know, I've been lucky to kind of see how the music scene has really grown in the Houston area as well. You know, and I think we've done it pretty big, obviously, with Destiny's Child, ZZ Top, Beyonce, and there's all the slew of rap acts that have come out of here. You know, we have we had the Ghetto Boys with Rap-A-Lot Records, Master P, Cash Money Records, all those guys were here. And, you know, that leads into the other part of the story. I after about, I don't know how long I was in Chicago, a friend of mine who was doing music distribution, a company called Southwest Wholesale here in Houston. They're about an $80 million distribution company, and they handled the southern region of the United States, Cactus Records, all the big retail outlets back then. And he was a friend of mine from when I put out my first record. He said, Eddie, you need to move back to Houston. This rap thing is really blowing up. taken off. I think this was 98, 99, 2000, right in there.
Yeah, I was in high school. That was just before Eminem was going to be the biggest star in the world, too.
Exactly. I moved back to Houston to jump into that and ended up at a radio station. I had some friends that were running a radio station. Kind of bumped into them one afternoon and, hey, Eddie, what are you doing? And I said, well, you know, I'm back in Houston and looking to get back into music. A friend of mine said I need to move back. Anyway, they hired me to put a compilation record together for them. That's kind of where my music on the major label side of things started, because that put me in touch with all that. We were licensing a, you know, back then these compilation CDs were real big.
Yep. I mean, they still are with, like, the whole Now stuff, but it's not like it was before. I mean, that's how I got into punk rock. It was Punk-O-Rama, Epitaph put it out, and it had a sign that The Offspring were on it, and that's how I found out about bands like Bad Religion. The compilation stuff was huge.
Yeah, so it was my duty to put one of those together for, at that time, Clear Channel and the local radio station, which was 97.9 The Box back then. It was a big hip hop station. All the majors would look at whatever was playing and try to sign it if it wasn't signed. And what that did, you know, it putting that record together put me into back then with every label, every publisher, you know. And it was a great. And we ended up putting about three or four of these records out. But I ended up doing other things for the radio station. Started booking concerts for them. You know, the relationships with the major labels started to grow, and we, you know, I ended up like over 40 of our radios. I did a Snoop Dogg tour through all of our radio stations. So, you know, the relationship grew with some of the labels, and I would end up discovering talent and signing a bunch of them. One of my big records that I was proud of was by an artist named Little Troy called Wanna Be a Baller.
I've heard of Lil Troy. I don't know about Wanna Be a Baller. I mean, if you want to be a baller, just listen to this radio show.
That's right. And you can want to be.
Yep. I want to be. But so tell me about Lil Troy. And then, believe it or not, we're almost done with segment one, and we can get into Peer Tracks. Holy shit.
Yeah. You know, and that record was like a scene out of a movie. I was working late. I knew him. He came up to the radio. Eddie, you got to help me try to get this record on. I said, Troy, you're going to get me fired if I do that. And I walked into the DJ, actually, and I asked him to play it. And he says, well, Eddie, you're going to get me fired if I play this record. Sure enough, we played it, and then it was complete silence afterwards. 2 weeks later, it was the number one requested song, went on to sell 2 million albums, signed it to Universal with Monty and Avery Lippman over at their Republic label. Mm-hmm. And the rest was history from there. And then, God, you know, from there, what else did I have?
Well, oftentimes the silence is not a good thing. So I'm glad that the silence took to being loud, I guess, right?
Yeah. We did get in trouble, too, by the way, for playing but, you know, he was just so confident that this was going to be it. And that's, you know, it's rare that that you're like part of an opportunity like that, you know. And it was pretty cool because, you know, after it proved itself, I started getting it on other stations within the network, and then just to really watch it grow from there and then be part of the signing on all of that was really cool, you know. So, yeah, that actually got me into the Grammys too. I ended up becoming a voting member of the Recording Academy and been there now 20 years. It's been my 20-year anniversary.
It's pretty nuts just to think that the 90s, like the mid to late 90s, was already 20 years ago, making me feel ancient. So I guess to end this segment and then go into the next one, what adjective would you use to describe the past 20 minutes of your life? I would just say informative.
Oh. Yeah, informative.
Oh, you're going to plagiarize my word. Fine, whatever. But we're going to get into, I guess, what you're doing now and how you can let people know what's up. And we're going to take a short break. I hope you enjoy these songs, these commercials, whatever Adobe is choosing to play. And stick around for Eddie Corral, which I did not butcher this time, correct? I don't think I did. And we will be back.
Corral.
The TX Corral. Okay, is Oklahoma. I would never say you're from Oklahoma.
TX. Yeah.
All right, stick around. All right. Well, we are back with one-fifth of the Ghetto Boys. Eddie, thank you for joining us again. I guess tell me what was next, and then tell me about, I guess it kind of makes sense now that you're working in, I guess, the crypto world, because you worked in the stock world, so you wear many different hats, well, I guess.
Yeah, you know, it's like you look at your career, and I'm a little bit older now, and you put it all together, and I am amazed how some of my experiences have really helped, you know, because after I left radio and the whole, all of that, I was about, you know, you got to imagine, I guess I was at the stations for, 8 years, and every day, you know, in and out, music, hip hop, rap, every day, you know, it was a constant. I was ready to go when I walked, and the business was slowing down somewhat, and I ended up just kind of getting out of it all together. My health, I had some health concerns, my father wasn't doing well, and you know, all of the life tribulations we all go through, and I took some time, I got completely out of the business. I had a restaurant, I had a moving business, and
wow.
Oh, all kind of little things that I wanted to get in, but you know, it the music business was always there, but I wasn't ready to get back in. And then one day, I saw this thing called Bitcoin. Now you got to remember, this back I think in 2009, 2010, and I didn't really get active with that until 2013, when I, you know, would sponsor some events, that Bitcoin events. Bitcoin was really starting to, no one knew what it was. It was a crypto digital currency.
And how'd you know about it? Because I'll be straight with you. I haven't been that adept in that market. I just started hearing about it only a few years ago. And then there was a time, I'd say last year, where it was the number one thing in my Facebook feed. So like, how did you get on the cusp of it so early?
Yeah, through looking into getting into a different, you know, I was actually fumbling around, what am I going to do next? You know, I wasn't happy with the restaurant, I wasn't happy with the moving, you know, should I get back into music? And then this Bitcoin, it was on YouTube, you know, a YouTube search and some digital this, digital that, and I started exploring it more, and then the mining process of how you can generate Bitcoin, which was fascinating. Next thing I knew, I had like 10 computers and I'm mining Bitcoin. And I'm one of those stories you hear about that I think at one time maybe I had 1,400 Bitcoin and it was like at 50 cents. You know, that what would that be, $700 today?
Possibly even more. It's pretty nuts.
Well, Bitcoin, yeah, trading at 6,300 today. I mean, multiply that. But yeah, no. Litecoin, I think, is at trading at $50 today. I had that at 3 cents, you know, back when 10,000 of that.
Oh, wow.
So I was really at the front. You know, I sold it all, got out of it, but stayed with the actual technology of it. It wasn't so much, you know, once you get past the frenzy of the money aspect and the trading and the crypto and the coin, you look at the underlying technology. And that is where we are today with what my partner and I have just constructed is the SoundDet blockchain. So we built our own blockchain to tackle some of the music industry's biggest issues or problems, which is, you know, transparency, tracking, accounting, and getting people paid on time. But when we got into it, there was no manual. You know, there's no, hey, this is how you do it. You know, we entered something that was pretty difficult. I'm not a coder, so we had to go and employ and find coders to architect what we were trying to build. We knew about blockchain. We knew what the technology could do. It was just now, how can we construct it without being coders? So we went and raised a little bit of money, hired some coders, and 4 years later, here we are with our new product called PeerTrax, peertrax.com.
And free. Tell me about PeerTrax, though. I mean, because you kind of went into it briefly about, you know, accountability and making sure people are paid. And I had Cedric on the show. And obviously, you know, I know Jamie, I had her on and she talked about it, too. But I guess tell me about what sets PeerTrax apart from all the other ones.
Yeah, well, the PeerTrax, well, with the other platforms, obviously there's subscription fees. And so you have the subscription-based model, so you don't have to listen to ads. And then you have traditional radio terrestrial, like you hear in your car, or then you have streaming radio, which is a set curated format. And we have all of that, but without the subscription and without the ads, is what our interactive streaming platform is. Now, we're independent labels and we're growing. We've got some major label product coming, and there will be the day when you can hear a Bruno Mars track on there. But the interactive side is growing, but we're going to be releasing a full-blown radio version, curated format, in the coming weeks. That'll have your Taylor Swift and your more top 40 current mixes for standard radio listening. So we'll have both pleasures, the interactive portion where you Matthew Knowles, believe it or not, Beyonce's father, who's based in Houston, is a friend of mine. It's got his catalog he's put up on there, and he has a lot of never-before-heard tracks from Destiny's Child, I believe he still owns, and interviews. Some really cool stuff he's going to be putting on. So the platform, yeah, you know, are we entering a competitive market? Yeah, YouTube just announced they're coming out with a streaming platform. Google, Apple, Spotify. But, you know,
Tidal, all that.
All that. But where we're targeting, too, where we're seeing a real rapid growth is the independent market. And even the independents that we're talking about have been major names at one point, but they're independent now, you know. And then how about Macklemore? You know, Macklemore was a guy that got lucky, and, you know, he was independent. And, you know, I think he still keeps an independent edge to him. Now, he still needs major label support to take him further.
But his biggest hits were put out, you know, DIY. And, you know, it's crazy. Chance the Rapper is DIY. He's completely independent. It could happen. Dispatch, there's some.
Yeah. You know, and I think that, yeah, it's a good point you make, because, you know, it can show you that an independent project can compete with a major product. And I think it goes to show, though, that, you know, I always feel like the independent mentality is, you know, F the majors and F top 40. Well, you know, I bet if your independent song became a major hit, it'd be a different song you're singing, I'm sure. But you know what I'm saying, right? You
of
know,
course.
It's always success is the thing that determines that hit, I guess, so to speak.
Well, I guess, tell me more. I mean, it seems like you have a whole bunch of people on board, including Cedric. How'd you get involved with him?
Well, I was at there was a Bitcoin conference in Austin, Texas in, I think, 2014. And that had the original, if anybody knows about crypto, you've got the Ethereum, you've got Litecoin, all these big cryptocurrency names. But a lot of the guys that built these platforms were at this little conference in Austin. And a guy I met there said, hey, you know, there's somebody you should meet, Cedric, who's really into the music, if y'all want to talk. So that's how we were introduced from a Daniel Larimar guy. And the reason I bring that name up is because Daniel, we were partners with a concept called BitShares Music. He's gone on to build EOS, E-O-S. And he his fundraiser ended. And I think he raised $3.5 billion for his project. You go read all about it. It's EOS, called EOS. But he was with us in the original creation, and then we went on to do it ourselves, and he went on to do EOS. So we're kind of lucky that that's the way the relationship. And so Cedric and I have, you know, been on this for 4 years,
like college.
We got serious about 2 years ago, and We've built a platform where any musician can come on, upload your music, your metadata, and so forth. If you own both sides, the publishing and the master, assuming you're the owner and we vet you out and everything's great, you know, your music can be streaming within 24 hours and you're paid within 24 hours. That's something else, too. And it's all traceable, trackable, transparent. You know, there's a back end of the platform. You go right in, you can see to the nanosecond who's streaming your music and where, which is pretty good. So it's not a, you know, I gotta go chase down Apple or Spotify on the back office. This is something like logging into your Outlook or whatever you use for email. You know, it's real simple and easy to use.
Well, that's pretty epic. And what are the plans for 2019?
Well, we're right now going to launch the radio app part of it, and then we're going to start penetrating and promotion and marketing and bringing more consumer to the product. What's happening now, or what's been happening, is our beta version, just getting the platform tested out all the way and slowly adding that's really been our challenge, is the catalog. I mean, it isn't just, you know, load it all up. You got to really make sure, because we've had already people trying to say they're Taylor Swiftie, or, you know.
That's everyone. Band is like Imagine Dragons or the 1975.
You know, I mean, you ought to see Snoop Dogg's. We had 23 Snoop Dogg's trying to sign up. So,
okay.
And just people trying to defraud the system. So, you know, we got to get past all that. And so we should be more consumer facing at the first of the year. But right now, you can send us an email. We look at your catalog music and, you know, verify everything and load it up. Yeah. And it's working. You know, musicians are being paid, and it's a great platform. So we're happy with it. We're ready to start adding other features. And, you know, we've got a lot of major label interest now wanting to do special promotions on the platform too. So starting to pick up traction. Yeah.
How many people on staff?
Staff right now, I think we have eight full-time coders and promotion people.
Wow. And I guess, what are your plans for 2022?
That I don't know.
Come on, man. You need a 93-year plan. No, I mean, so January 1st is actual, like, is that going to be considered launch day, or when it's public, or how does that work?
Yeah, I guess we would consider it maybe. We've done a soft launch of it right now, so it does function. You can bring me. We can do everything. It's not going to. It's just that we'll be a heavier promotion and marketing at the beginning of the year, for sure. Yeah, right now it's just been testing beta, and it is functioning, and people are being paid, so it's still operational and everything. We're just going to put on a bigger push for the beginning of the year.
Well, what are you listening to right now that's getting you excited? And it can be stuff, you know, that's on Pure Tracks or that's not.
I got to tell you that there's a little pop band. I'm into the pop music, by the way. You say whatever you want. I don't really care.
That's fine. I like the word. I just saw Backstreet Boys. It's all good.
I love the writing genius of that Max Martin guy behind those records. I look at it from a whole other angle, you know, just how, where these songs come from and how they go. But there's a group called Thrill Chaser on our that's on Pure Tracks right now that I like a lot. There's another guy, and I'm a little favorite to this, Eddie Cito. We signed him. He's from Watertown. He's got a new song coming. And who else is on there that I like? I've been listening to the gospel stuff, to tell you the truth.
I mean, you're from the South. That makes sense. And all those people started that way.
Got to get a little gospel hour in there, right?
I mean, my last name is Waldman, so I don't typically listen to gospel, but I respect the singing. And, you know, I mean, Jamie and I are on the same side of that fence. But, you know, I mean, those people can sang. That's the good word for it, right?
And there's a little rapper on there too, 88 and 8, and he has a really great Bitcoin rap track.
That's awesome.
Yeah, you got to get into that one. It's pretty cool.
I guess I'll give a shout out because you said
You got to. I didn't know you got to get your crypto keys, right? You got to have your crypto keys.
Well, I actually co-manage a band with my assistant Emily, who you did not meet, unfortunately, and they're called 18th and Addison. So I guess the numbers work out sometimes when talking about this. So is there anything else that you may have missed when talking about your company? Because the way I look at the show is I want it to be a really good, like, 40 to 45 minute ad for Pure Tracks. Is there anything else that you want to tell people about? Because I really hope that next year and 2022 and 2037 are good ones for you. So.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the time you give us just to talk. And yeah, I know you've been tracking us for a while.
Tracking you for a while.
You've been peer tracking us for a while. That's right. It's taken us about, you know, 4 years to get here. So we're really excited. What we're really happy about, though, is seeing it work, you know, and watching a different system, you know, and for the musician, something easy. You know, you got to go through all the middlemen, all the other associates, and you don't have to do that today. And let me tell you, the majors are looking at this. Everyone's looking at, wow, maybe there's a different way, you know, to be paid. You know, if a song is streamed, pay me. You know, you don't go through a hamburger place, right, and say, hey, I'll, like Wimpy, isn't it? Wimpy used to pay you on Tuesday for a hamburger today.
That's true. The way I look at music publishing, and I might have given you this analogy, is that, like, I write a song in 2012, right? And I record it, and it takes, you know, let's just say 2 business days, and it's out there. And people just keep consuming it, and it's done, and yet I still get stuff in the mail. So for people who aren't songwriters or musicians, it's like, imagine you made a batch of cookies, like, in 1997 that people just keep eating, and you know, you deserve compensation. And I guess with the older model, people weren't as quick to pay, but now it's direct to the person, so you're really helping a lot of people.
Yeah
Was that analogy okay? I didn't rehearse
that's,
it
that's it. Yeah, I you know, to take the time to sit in and look at it from that perspective is, yeah, I appreciate it. But you're right, it you know, time, money, and everything else to get here is what it took. And I'm just glad it's having an impact, you know, and people are experiencing good things from it.
It seems like they are so far. So I guess since we have a little bit of time, do you want to give a special shout out to the young, sweet girl I met with you that's a singer, and you could talk about her career?
Miss Macy Medford, right?
That's right. That's such a Southern name. Miss Macy Medford with her song Grits. I don't know. Like, it just sounded so Southern for a second. Grits outside of Whataburg.
Yeah, well, you know, that I signed her when she was, I believe, 16, thinking we were going to do great things, but it hadn't been a disappointment. She's been at Belmont University at school. So
yep, in Nashville.
Nashville, and I didn't know she had the acting gene on the other side. She's great, great performer, great singer, and we have some new material coming out on her at the first of the year, but she's really on the acting side, so we're going to pursue that as well. A lot of great opportunities popping up, but we'll be more active next year with her when she gets ready to graduate, and we'll get ready to tackle the rest of the world, right?
Well, when you took her on as a client, what does that mean? Like, as a management client, like, how does that relationship work?
Yeah, well, with her, a little bit different. Yeah, I have an independent label still called In Play Music.
See, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, I sign artists and develop them and so forth. And yeah, I don't really publish it too much or advertise it. But yep, if I see something promising, I pretty much try to sign it up and manage it, produce it, you know, we take care of the music pretty, you know, 100%, really. It's a full-blown artist development deal.
That's pretty cool. I didn't even know that. And I guess with the remaining little bit of time, I guess tell people how they could check Pure Tracks out and how they can get a hold of you, and we'll call it a day.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you. Yeah, if you want to learn more about the platform, you can go to puretracks.com. And if you want to learn more about the underlining technology and how it actually all works, what the blockchain is, how it actually pays and triggers the royalty payment, you can go to soundac.io, and that's soundac.io. Hey, and if you want to send me an email, or, you know, I'm pretty open too. It's ecorral, ecorral at puretracks.com. Yeah.
So, well, you could, that's pretty. That's literally the friendliest way to do it.
Texas style, right? Houston style.
Yeah, that's big ribs style is the way to do it. So, the next few weeks we have some really great guests. We got Taylor Anspaugh from the band Taylor and the Apes, and I might put him in touch with you guys. The good thing is that I said in the intro and a lot of other shows, we don't typically have musicians on the show. We have behind the scenes people like you who are, a lot of the times, I guess, agents or managers or label people, and this is a newer development. So hopefully small indie artists can really benefit from you. And then, this is going to air in either, you know, later this month or December, even January, but I'm going to be flying to New York and taking a few weeks off of this here radio show. But right when I get back, We're going to get back into the swing of things. So you could tune in every single Tuesday night at 5 o'clock Pacific time, 8 o'clock Eastern time. And I believe in Nashville, it's an hour earlier than it is in New York. Is Houston 2 hours later than LA, or is it 1 hour later? I'm not sure.
1 hour behind.
Right? One hour. Always. One hour ahead in Houston, maybe 1 hour behind Nashville. And every single Sunday morning, 5 a.m. Pacific time, 8 a.m. Eastern time, the show reruns. You can go on Adobe.com, stream every single episode, and you can also go on the podcast app and download and subscribe to Waldman's Words. And again, I'm going to repeat, this is extremely informative. Thank you so very much, Eddie, for your time. And any final thoughts or words?
As we trademarked, make a living loving music. That's all I have to say. That's right. I appreciate the time, Scott. It's been great. I really like what you do for the community. I mean, you really open it up for people like us to come on and talk about what we're doing. And yeah, I really had fun today. I appreciate it.
Well, good. I mean, I like can't hear how awesome I am enough. So I encourage you to tell the world that. And Jamie, thank you so very much for orchestrating this. We actually scheduled this interview before we actually even met. So I'm glad that it came through. And again, special shout out to Emily Burke. Thank you.